Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for streaming. Thank you for listening. We got a great double dip for you this week. I had a pretty cool experience last week where I got a call to go down and check out Def Leppard, who were rehearsing for their upcoming tour, which is now happening, the tour currently out there with Journey. I'll tell you about that in a second. And then the second interview in this week's Double Dip on the podcast is Sully Erna of Godsmack. The band just released a brand new album called When Legends Rise, real good record, and they are currently playing out on the road, and I'll be seeing them this weekend at Rocklahoma, which I am hosting once again in Pryor, Oklahoma. As a matter of fact, if you're hearing this podcast on post day, which is the 24th day of May, and you're attending Rocklahoma, you're in the Tulsa area, I'm going to be doing a meet and greet with the members of the Cult, and we will be at Riffs in the Hard Rock in Tulsa tonight, Thursday night at 8 o'clock. It's totally free. Come on by and say hello. Have a drink if you're in the area, and then I'll be at Rocklahoma all weekend. And I will be doing my radio show from Tulsa and the Hard Rock for most of the rest of this week and most of next week, hosting Striper at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa this coming Wednesday before flying home. So a lot of Tulsa time coming up. If you're in that area of the country, hope to say hello. And also, if you are a listener of my Sirius XM show on Volume, you know that I did my latest Trunk Top 20, which was on Van Halen. A lot of huge reaction to that. That continues today. Depending upon when you're hearing this, the reaction show Thursday and Friday with a lot of reviews and reports about my Van Halen top 20 list and hearing from the audience. So a lot of fun stuff going on. Get involved. Follow on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the website. You'll find all of my appearances listed there on the website. Some great stuff coming up. Hope you come out and say hello if you're coming to your area. I just mentioned Tulsa, and I also just will tell you that I'll be coming to Cincinnati soon, June 9th. Hosting, or I should say doing a speaking show at the venue in Cincinnati. Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood for Poison and Cheap Trick, hosting that July 1st. Back to the IDL Ballroom July 13th to host Dokken. July 28th at the IDL to host Bisto Blanco. That is a free show. And then Faster Pussycat, all in Tulsa at the IDL, August 18th. Back to the Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood, September 12th for Scorpions and Queensryche. And I'm doing a destination event, Dominican Republic. It's a bit down the line. November 3rd is the week in Punta Cana, 80s in the sand. I give you an early heads up on this because it's one of those all-inclusive resort vacations. If you can swing it, if you're interested, go to 80sinthesand.com, learn more, and come on out and see me. Now, if you go to EddieTrunk.com, you can also see a trailer, a teaser for the first episode of my brand new TV series, which is called Trunk Fest, covering music festivals. We're getting closer now. The premiere date is July 1st for the very first episode. It'll be on Access TV, new episodes every Sunday night. It premieres, like I said, July 1st, 9:30, 8:30 Central. First episode from Sturgis. There will be plenty of teaser video coming to social media, coming to the homepage of my site as well. Hope you guys take a second to check it out. Spread the word. Hope you enjoy my new TV project again on Access TV. Check your local grid. See if you get Access. DirecTV, Dish Network, a lot of services do. The channel is spelled AXS on your grids. If you don't get it, hopefully we'll have some online options for you to be able to see it as well. But we appreciate you checking it out and spreading the word about Trunk Fest, brand new show coming to Access TV. Remember, if you're doing any shopping on Amazon, start at amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. For all of your shopping, that would be greatly appreciated. We'll start with Joe Elliott. We'll finish with Sully Erna. Really cool thing happened about a week ago. Vivian Campbell, all the guys in Leopard, good friends. And Vivian dropped me a line and said, hey, we're rehearsing at the Meadowlands Arena in New Jersey. The Meadowlands is a great old arena that I literally grew up going to, spending so much of my life there, seeing so many shows. And it's been closed for a number of years. What now? They now use it for people to do rehearsals and rent out, and Def Leppard and Journey rented it out so they could set up their whole stage and do performance rehearsals with their full production. So Vivian invited me down. I ended up bringing my radio equipment, and that day I did my Sirius XM show live from Def Leppard's rehearsals. And I was able to get Joe Elliott to come over and hang out and talk a little bit about this current tour, which just started with Journey, the co-headline run they are currently on. So this is from last week as the band was preparing for that tour, an interview with Joe Elliott from backstage at their rehearsal. Interview number two on this week's podcast is a call-in. And again, all of my interviews originate on my Sirius XM show, which you can hear every day on Volume Channel 106, live 2 to 4 Eastern, replay 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand on the Sirius XM app. But you get a little taste of it, a little taste of it here with the podcast each week. But all of this stuff comes from the radio show, which is on every day. Hope you join us on the Sirius XM side for way more content live that I can give you there each and every day. And again, just a little sampling, and these interviews are courtesy of the show on Volume. So, Sully Erna of Godsmack called in. As I mentioned, I'll be seeing Godsmack headline one of the days of Rocklahoma this weekend. Always fun to talk to Sully. Their new album is called When Legends Rise, as I mentioned. It's really good. I think you'll enjoy, as always, a great and candid conversation with Sully Erna of Godsmack. So we start with Joe. We finish with Sully, a double dip on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. And we will get into it right after this.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, did you know 66% of men lose their hair by age 36? And when you start to notice the hair loss, it might be too late. So it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace hair you've lost. That's where 4HIMS comes in. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and it is all for men. You'll get real doctors, medical-grade solutions to help you treat hair loss and other men issues. No snake oil pills, no gas station counter supplements. That stuff's dangerous. You don't know what it is. You don't know anything. We're talking about prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting room. It's super easy. Answer a few questions. And a doctor, yes, a doctor will review and prescribe for you. And the products are shipped directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of HIMS for just $5 right now while supplies last. Go to the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Here's what you do. You go to 4hims.com/trunk. That's FORHIMS.com/TRUNK. 4hims.com/trunk. That is 4hims.com/trunk.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Well, if you like this podcast, check out the Dennis Miller Option. It's every Wednesday on Podcast One. Snarky King of Comedy is back to provide his no-holds-barred opinion on current events, politics, pop culture, and whatever else is on his mind. Check out the Dennis Miller Option at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also, remember to rate and review.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Our first guest on a double dip on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast, as I mentioned, from backstage at the Meadowlands Arena where Def Leppard were rehearsing last week. The band's lead singer, Joe Elliott, was nice enough to break away from rehearsals and give me a few minutes. And here's how that conversation went on the Eddie Trunk podcast.
Good to see you, man.
Let's do a formal handshake like the British do.
As of a couple hours ago, I had no idea I'd be seeing you and doing a radio show from your rehearsal.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Thank you for having me, man.
You're very welcome.
When did you get to the States here?
We came in on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great because we've got 7 nights in the one bed. We don't get used to that now. We've got 62 shows to play between now and when the US tour ends, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, we're based in the New York area, let's say,
right?
Because we're kind of back and forth everywhere around Manhattan doing stuff. We were in a place called SIR, which is a very famous
rehearsal space. Yeah,
Bowie and you know everybody in the world's probably used it. The Who. We were in there for a couple of days rehearsing for A, the tour, and B, for a session that we did for Spotify. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention them on your...
Sure, yeah. Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, we did a session for them, just two songs. I won't say any more because I don't want to spoil the surprise for whenever it's going to get broadcast, but bit of fun, one of ours and somebody else, and a cover of somebody else's stuff.
I'm laughing because for so long, Def Leppard's catalog was not available as streaming, and now you're doing stuff with Spotify, so you're all in right now.
Yeah, well, we just had to make sure that, you know, we were happy with the way our catalog was going to be handled, and you know, any record any kind of company, no matter whether it's, you know, Universal Records or whether it's FedEx or, you know, Coca-Cola, the name is the name. The people in underneath it that run it at any given time can be good people or bad people. Or on your side or not on your side. And for the longest time they were not on our side. The people that are now in at Universal are on our side. So it was like, okay, well, then let's get this thing done. So that's the only reason we were holding out, was like we didn't want to work with people that didn't really want to work with us. And now they do, and everybody's happy, and it's all kumbaya. It's
great. You know, you guys were originally on the same label as Bon Jovi on Mercury Polygram, and I know John was – I had him on the show not too long ago, and he was very outspoken about all the – he had a lot of difficulties with them and some of the transitions that happened there, and then ultimately ended up re-signing with them, and everything ended up working
itself
out.
Well, that's the way it goes. I mean, you know, you somebody comes in and they go, I'm not really keen on that. I don't see the – why we need to be working with them or whatever, you know. And I get it. Some people, they just want new blood. Then all of a sudden, I think they realize that they, you know, what we, I suppose we've become what you call a legacy artist.
Yeah.
There's a value to us, obviously. I mean, look at the ticket sales on this tour. Look how well our catalog is streaming, how well it's selling. We had 9 albums in the top 20 when we put the stuff out digitally on the first day.
It's amazing.
Do you know what I mean? It's nuts, you know. And so then they knew that beforehand. They knew that was going to be like that. They've said, look, we promise this is the way it's going to be. And they've shown their faith in us, which nobody else is doing for the last 10 years. So we were like, okay, cool. That's great. That's all we wanted. We just, you know, you don't want to be with somebody that doesn't want to be with you.
Yeah,
be your wife, girlfriend, or your record company.
Right.
So we got it all sorted. So, you know, we didn't actually get divorced. Well, we did. We got divorced in 2009, but we got remarried last year.
Time to not again.
Oh, happy days, you know.
May 21st, this tour with Journey starts, which is just in a few days, in Hartford. Joe, for the listeners, take them through what goes on here, because as you mentioned, you were at SIR, which I imagine much of that was more of the musical aspects of what you're going to play, tightening up the band. This is more, again, we're not telling people where we are because for obviously security purposes, but this is more of your full stage is up. This is more about the production and you guys learning and getting your spots, right?
We know what we're doing. I mean, and I'm not saying that from an arrogant point of view, but the stage is pretty much the same shape and design, that the bit that we stand on,
right,
that we've been using for a while. But it's the production around us that's it's like a coat, okay? Your body doesn't change, the coat changes, and all of a sudden you look different, you know? So it's a whole new rig, lighting rig. There is a slight difference in the way that the backline is has been put together. We've got giant screens as usual because it's just part of, well, you can't not do it these days, but we want to, because when you've got a legacy of as long as we've got 40 years or so, you've got some great stuff that you can use as content. that makes you look ridiculous because you're 40 years younger and all that kind of thing. But it's all fun. And then we're not ashamed of the fact that, you know, like on certain songs, we'll run photographs at the start of us in 1980 all the way through till this last tour. And so you can see the progression and the aging of the band or whatever you want to call it. You know?
Well, it's easy for you guys to do because you still look good too. I mean, hell, man. I mean, I don't know if Phil's gotten into you or what, but you look great, man.
I went through a pretty bad period of health issues 2-3 years ago. which I never really discussed because it was like we just always been one of them bands that just get on with it. But I had pneumonia twice, and that really messed me up, you know, and steroids and all that kind of crap.
Were you on the road when you caught it?
Yeah, or? I was, you know, and then we had to cancel after the boat, you remember, and all that right. kind of
stuff. Oh, so you were dealing with that on the ship as well?
That's one of the reasons my voice went, you know.
Right.
And then when you get the real diagnosis in and you're like, okay, we need to do something about this, you've just got to ride it out. And part of that is, I mean, it's a long time since I was one of these up all night drinking until the bar closes kind of guys anyway. But you do have to change your lifestyle to a certain extent. But it's more a case of just doubling up your doses of vitamins and stuff. You know? And eating well, you know. And I mean, in fairness, I've been, I juice and do smoothies. I mean, and I've been doing that for quite a long time.
Yeah.
But it's the difference is starting to kick in now. It just takes a while for it to happen. But, you know, I had to get over the health issues first.
Well, I'm glad you did, man.
And this all seems to have, you know, touch wood, sort itself out. But, you know, we do what we can to make the thing look different each tour. And but not radically. We're not trying to do something where it's like so different to last year that it's like, to a point, it could be disappointing. It's got to be just a progression, and we're okay with general progressions. We look back on this one and say, how different was it to last year? And it's like somewhat different. And we look back at it to how it was 3 years ago, and it's very different. You know, it's just changing things up a little bit. You know, we haven't got a new album to promote, so we've changed up the set list, but at the same time, we're not playing any new songs because we haven't got any new songs. Mm-hmm. But having just seen the catalogue being released, it's a good tour for us to like promote the catalogue, if you mm-hmm. like. So, and let's be honest, you know, we're not stupid. We know why people come to see a band like us or a band like Journey in venues this big. They don't want to hear the singer say, and here's 12 songs from my new album. They're here to celebrate what they've known all their lives if they've been with us for a long time. So, we're not stupid enough to think or arrogant enough to think that, well, we're not going to play Sugar and Photograph on this tour.
Right.
I know people that have done that and then people don't come back on the next one. But at the same time, we have to kind of change it around a little bit. Just so we don't get bored to death, you know.
Oh, you don't want to turn me loose in that room where that set list is being made, man, because I'll throw all kinds of stuff at you.
You'd want us to do Answer to the Master. I get that, but, you know.
Oh, that would be a great one.
You'd be the only person in the building that knows the song.
Walls come tumbling down, I'm on the chair, and then nobody
else
is.
My point is, if I said to you, all right, let's swap roles for 20 minutes, and you came and stood where I stand, and we did that song, and you watched the audience reaction.
Oh, I know.
You'd go, stop, let's just do Animal. You
know? I was in this venue. I was in this venue. We're not saying where I am, but I've been in this venue since I was a kid. And I was in this venue once, and Scorpions were playing. And this was at the height of their American breakthrough, with No One Like You and everything. And they went in, and they did, I think it was Sales of Sharon or something, Taken by Force, and I lost my mind. I'm like, oh my God, they're doing the Uli stuff. And I look around, and literally the whole arena is like sitting there. So I get it. I totally get it.
The way to do it is like what the Stones do when you play arenas, stadiums, and then a club. And then you go to the club and you play your B-sides because the incredibly hardcore fans will go, and they're the ones that want to hear that. What you've got to realize is that the front row are the people that have got your entire catalog on every format that's ever come out. And the further back you go, you've got more incidental fans. But it's the incidental fans that turn a club show into a theater show, or a theater show into an arena show, or an arena show into a stadium, is the ones that may only have one album.
Yeah.
Or they've known the one song. But you're like, okay, that's cool. It's like, look, I'll be the first to admit, I'm a huge fan of Joni Mitchell. But other than Big Yellow Taxi, I can't really name you another song. But I listen to her records because I never look at the titles.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's the same thing when it comes to anybody. Like, I mean, Kate Bush, I play her records all the time. I already know the title of like three songs.
Right.
And with certain artists, I saw Stevie Nicks the other night. She had a private show in New York. And
Fleetwood Mac or just her own thing?
No, just her.
Okay.
It was a private show. And, you know, she played, obviously, a couple of Mac songs, but she played mostly all her own stuff. And then you heard all the things that you know of hers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear songs, you go, oh, my God, I remember this when it was on MTV in 1988, you know. And it's one of those that was a hit then, but it didn't remain a hit.
Like Stand Back or something like that?
No, that remains it, because that's on the radio every day.
Right.
It's like Pour Some Sugar on Me compared to Action Not Words
right,
or something.
Right, right, okay, gotcha.
But you remember, okay, there was a video for this, and you heard it. Well, I haven't heard this song in so many years. And, you know, that kind of thing is all well and good, because she was in a tiny club, a little theatre, and she could have played anything, and it wouldn't have mattered. And then as long as she bails it out towards the end with, you know, something from Rumors or whatever, you know.
You know who's good like that, who you guys have toured with, is Cheap Trick.
Yeah.
Cheap Trick will do like the first three quarters of their set. They actually once let me pick their set, which was crazy, and they actually played it. But they'll open with three quarters of the bulk of the beginning is either new songs or deep tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll always get a little bit of a weird buzz in the audience, like, hey, what are they doing? Where's I Want You to Want Me? Where's this? And then they will end like six in a row, Dream Police into I Want You to Want into Surrender. And everyone walks out of there like, okay, you know, that was, you know, I got my show. And Aerosmith is, I believe, brilliant at it, because they actually leave anywhere from 5 to 7 big songs off the set list. They put enough big ones in, 70s, 80s, but they'll throw in No More, No More. You'll get a little sprinkling of the... I saw them do Kings and Queens last tour. I went crazy. They'll throw a bone to the old guard.
Yeah.
Which is a nice way to do it. You know? Yeah.
And we get to do that later on in the year when we take the Hysteria tour to places, uncharted territories for that particular, like what we did in Vegas.
You're doing Hysteria start to finish, but not in America, right?
Well, we are technically, yes, because we're doing two shows in Hawaii.
Okay. Right.
But then we've got Japan, Australia, and the UK. But that doesn't mean to say that that's not going to open up possibilities to do it here. We're just not doing it right now.
Right.
But, of course, that brings in the fact that if we're going to do Hysteria from halfway through till the end, what are we going to do beforehand? And look what we did in Vegas. You know, I mean, we got a little tired of what we'd like to call Dorito Boy, criticizing the set list. And this is a guy that never goes to a gig, you know, because he doesn't understand how the business works. Mm-hmm. He doesn't understand what it's like to be in a band and just go, oh, they play the same songs every night. Yeah, but not to the same people in the same venue. You know, we take it on the road. So when we play it, you know, you play, say, Salt Lake City, and then you're in Denver, Colorado, you might take 2 days off, and then you're in Chicago, then in New York. It's not, they don't travel behind you.
Right.
It's like a traveling circus. And those audiences deserve to hear the songs. If they're the most popular songs, you play them everywhere you go. But when it came to doing Vegas, you know, we were the ones that didn't move, and the audience came to us from all over the world. But we still messed the front half of the set up. And when Dorito Boy will sit there in his mom's basement,
Dorito Boy,
you know, criticizing your set list, okay, you know what? I don't like bowing down to this kind of thing, but let's mess with somebody's head. And we pulled out the first song we played, and I looked on YouTube at midnight, and it finally got posted, and they didn't know what it was called.
That's when you were doing Def Leppard?
Yeah, and we did a song called Good Morning Freedom.
Which was something called Rainbow's End
or something.
Right.
Yeah, and it was a B-side from the On Through the Night sessions.
I think you were the only one in the band who knew what it was. Maybe
I played it to the guys, and I said, let's do this. And they were like, yeah, it sounds great, because it's a great song to play live. It's great, you know. And we pulled out things like On Through the Night, Off High and Dry, and we were doing Mirror Mirror, which we'd not done for a while, and Wasted and Rock Brigade. You know, I mean, we did Love and Hate Collide. We did songs that we don't normally play in the States or at all, you know. And we'll probably do that as well this time around, which means that should we get the chance to play a few shows in the States where we do that, we'll do the same thing. So, yeah, we like throwing the odd bone in there, but not to the detriment of the entire evening. You know, it depends. You've got to realize that you are an extreme minority.
Oh, I understand that.
You see what I mean?
I completely understand that.
You can't play to the minority.
Trust me, I go to enough shows that I completely understand that. And I have that argument with my audience all the time. You would be a minority too if you were in the crowd, because you're a hardcore fan of the bands you love for the most part.
I am, but I'm also a hardcore fan of their greatest hits album mostly.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like when if I saw Ian Hunter, I'd be disappointed if he didn't play Cleveland Rocks and Once Bitten, Twice Shy over two new songs, because it's like, well, I came to hear them. I came to hear you play them because they're part of my DNA and that kind of thing. So, Yeah, it's an interesting argument, and it's in fairness, it's an argument that doesn't have a conclusion because everybody's right. opinion is completely different. This is just my opinion,
yeah.
And you either agree with it or you accept it, even if you don't agree with it, or you don't. And,
so who end of the day, who ultimately makes that. The Def Leppard set list? Here you are getting ready
Sab's
to start.
Pretty much, he's the.
That's
he's,
what Vivian told me. Yeah.
He's the one that comes in with a pen and paper and the furrowed brow. And the rest of it, like, hey, dude, fine, whatever you want, you know.
But as the singer, I'm sure you get the ability, you can call off songs and say,
well,
I don't want to do that
songs
one.
It's like, I don't want to do this one so early in the set because you've got to build up stamina to get to that certain song. I mean, I wouldn't ever want to open a set with Photograph, but I don't mind ending with it. You know what I mean? Your lungs are open and it's a bit of a challenge, you know. And plus the fact that why would you open a set with Photograph? You know what I mean? You've got to lead up to something. The end of the set is the winning line. You don't want the winning line at the front of the race. You want it at the end of the race, you know. And so you've got to have, well, I mean, that's a horse terminology I'm using here, but like you were talking about Cheap Trick, we use that end of the set, we call it the home straight, where you're galloping towards the end, and it's like, this is when you need all your jockey in his saddle and you need everything in shape. So that's where you pull out the big guns.
Yeah.
Because... one of the reasons it's a great thing to open with a new song, as we did for the last 2 years, is, to be quite honest, it doesn't matter whether it's Led Zeppelin or Loudon Wainwright III, 20% of the crowd are still at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And why waste a fantastic song on if people aren't in their seats yet?
Right.
So the ones that want to hear your new material are in their seats.
Yeah.
So everybody wins, you know what I mean? And then by the time everybody gets settled down, they've got their peanuts and their beer... you're already into, like, you know, Let It Go, which is probably what, you know, because they've been around since High and Dry, and they've, oh, did I miss, I don't, I haven't got the new album yet. We know the demographic of the way that the audience is, and we're realistic to not think that everybody that buys a ticket comes in, they've all got exactly the same attention span for every single song in the same order we think that they would. They don't. Everybody's opinion is different, but there's a generalization that when people get together and bang shoulders with each other, there's an acceptance of... it's like a tribe, you know, we're like these guys up there and this is our tribe and we do our thing and they mostly accept what we do because they're fans, otherwise they wouldn't come.
Yeah, of course.
So they'll allow you a new song every 20, 30 minutes. I mean, trust me, as I've said many times to you as well, just look on the back of a Stones bootleg. That's where you put your new songs.
Mm.
Open, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, 90 minutes, done. You go more three or four new songs, it can get a little self-indulgent in a venue this size.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful. Open mic night in the basement of some place in Greenwich Village, play your entire album, go for it. Elton John and the Troubadour, go for it. Because he hadn't written Goodbye Yellow Brick Road by now.
Right, right. You so, got to. I saw the door open. You got to go? Or you have another? You have a little more time. You got to go.
Have I got to go?
Does he have to go?
I've got to go.
He has to go.
I'll come back.
Come back. I'm here till 4 o'clock.
Oh, well. Oh, look at that. It's not even a watch.
Hey, quick last thing I want to tell you. I emailed you something the other couple weeks ago. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You saw that?
Yes,
fan
I did.
Voting
yes.
number yeah. one Def yeah. Leppard that yeah, the yeah. fans want.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you guys have nothing to do with it, but that's got to feel good.
It does feel good, you know. Yeah. And as we've said before, I have no feelings one way or the other about the way it works. I just don't. Again, this is like, I suppose what I'm putting myself in the position of is the fan that says, yeah, well, you should change your set list up more. I look at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and I look at the who's not in it and go, who decides that?
Right.
That's what I think is wrong. When it's, as I like to say, some guys in tuxedos behind a closed curtain deciding who's going to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is not right. Yeah. It should be voted for by people that buy their records or just on... You know, I understand there's a logic to, well, you can't just put them in because they've sold 200 million records because it could be awful and not even rock and roll. But if Tupac's in there, you know, you can argue, should he be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Shouldn't be a separate Hall of Fame?
Of course.
You know, I'm not in the Grand Ole Opry.
Right.
I don't see Led Zeppelin in the Grand Ole Opry. It's like, where do you draw the line? And when I think about, you know, when you told the statistics that it took 7-8 attempts to get Skinner in, to me, is beyond rude, actually. Not even ridiculous. It's actually insulting to a band that are, you know, mom, pop, apple pie, American dream band that have been around since 73, been through more hell than we could ever go through, and everybody knows what we've been through. And yet it took God knows how long for them to get in. And you think about all the people that aren't in, And I think, well, there's no chance that we're going to get in if such and such is not in. And so you kind of distance yourself from it going, well, how important is it? I look at our career, even after the 90s when it was really tough for us, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger as years go by, and we're not in. So it's not doing us any harm not being in.
No,
there.
Of course not.
And I can't really see us taking some, you know, massive leap of popularity just because we do get in there.
Yeah, so not exactly right.
If the kids' vote is in, we will go.
Well,
no doubt.
Clearly that poll
but
shows
I've told
that if
everybody,
they did,
and I'll say it
in.
Live on your show now, I am not wearing a tuxedo.
Good. Okay? You shouldn't. You shouldn't. Thanks, Joe.
Over and out.
Appreciate you coming
You're welcome, bud.
I'm here for the next 90. If you want to come and talk beer or anything else, we'll talk about the Def Leppard beer. Some of the other guys will come in. Yeah, we'll do that, I'm sure. Yep. All right. Good to see you, man. Thank you. Well, my thanks to Joe Elliott and all the guys in Def Leppard and their management for having me out to their rehearsals and making some time for me. See Def Leppard currently on tour with Journey. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Interview number two on this week's podcast is with Sully Erna of Godsmack. That is next.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Here's some useful car tips you may not know or you may not be aware of. Like a coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car, that'll improve your gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Pretty weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, you know what to do. Check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Have you checked out the big podcast with Shaq here at Podcast One? Yeah, we talk basketball, but we're a lot more than just sports.
I met this fabulous lady. She's had to be in her 70s, knew everything about me, knew everything about sports. And the last thing she says, I love your podcast. And
wow.
I
said,
oh, but I hate that John
Kincaid. Oh, no.
That's terrible.
Listen free to the big podcast with Shaq exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Back with the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Always fun to talk to Sully Erna of Godsmack. I'll be seeing him and the band this weekend when I host Rocklahoma. Band is currently out there on tour. The new album is out there as well. We talk about all of it with Sully Erna right now on the podcast. What's going on, brother?
Eddie, what's up, my man?
I think last time we talked, we spent more than half the interview talking about our respective sports teams versus anything else.
Shocking, the Boston versus
New York dynamic.
And everyone reels me in because, you know, they know I'm a Patriots guy. And, of course, everyone's got a hate on the Patriots, so I'm a target.
Well, I told you when I think we spoke last time, being a Giants fan, I don't hate on the Patriots at all, but I found it fascinating in talking to Pats fans how much they hate on the Giants because of the two Super Bowls. So I guess
hey,
I could
but
see
you
that.
Know what? Let me say this. Exclude me on that because here's where New York won my respect. When you guys beat us in the Super Bowl the year we were undefeated and we were just full, I couldn't believe what happened on that turnaround at the end. You know the story, but I will say that, you know, the New York fans on the way out, they're like, oh, man, that was a tough break, tough loss. Sorry about that. What, they were really, really cool. And I go, you know what? We're dicks. Boston needs to smarten up a little bit. We have no mercy. You know, we could be losing the whole game and come back and win by a half a point and be like, you guys suck so bad. It doesn't matter. It's just terrible. I happen to be not one of those guys. I just am a big fan of sports in general. And I have a lot of respect for these competitors. So I, you know, my hat's off to anybody who can take down the trophy.
Do you get into the draft? Do you watch the NFL draft? Do you get caught up in all that?
You know, I didn't this year because I've just been so busy with the launch of this record and the tours that we're prepping for and all that stuff. So I've been hearing little things through the grapevines, but I haven't been able to see it.
You know, the big news was that Brady was asked recently if he felt respected by Kraft and Belichick, and he said, I'll take the fifth on that. So the media is going crazy with that one today.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, so there seems to be a little bit of drama because I guess they felt that those guys are ready to change to Garoppolo, and then he went, I don't know, whatever's going on there. But we'll see. We'll see. It'll be here before you know it. Never too soon to talk football for me. But anyway, I know you're here to talk about a new record.
That's white rich people drama.
Exactly. The new album is killer, bro. When Legends Rise is the name of it. And it's been 4 years since the last record. And, you know, you sent me a note saying you thought I was going to like it. And I really, really do. You guys came. I mean, it's melodic. It rocks. 11 songs. You know, everything's about 3.5 minutes. It doesn't make you work too hard. On first listen, it grabs you. I mean, really, really great record. Tell us about putting this one together.
Yeah, you know, it's been a year in the making. You know, we obviously put our last one out in 2014, and everyone's like, well, why does it take you 4 years to do a record? I'm like, well, it doesn't, because we dropped a record in 2014. We toured for 2 years. I toured for another year after that on my solo record, and we spent a year writing this record. So what's 4 years for a fan is a blink of an eye for me. But yeah, you know, it was just, for me, I wanted to experiment a little bit, explore some new sounds, work with some outside writers a little bit. You know, we hadn't done that yet, and I've done a lot of that in the past with other young bands that I produce, or even my solo stuff working with some other musicians that aren't in Godsmack. And it's, you know, it's always been a really fun experience to be able to explore other backgrounds from musicians that come from blues or jazz or whatever it is. And so I was like, why not take that experience and try to see, you know, what some other reputable writers may think we sound like or, you know, want to present to us. So, you know, I worked with some people like John Feldman, Clint Lowry from Seven Dust. There was a kid named Eric Ron, who actually I invited to produce the record with me because he was just had a great head for melody. But more importantly, he was someone that was showing me a lot of talent when he was presenting me with some demos and how good the production quality was. And I was like, you know, I think this kid could sonically make this record sound great. So, yeah, it was the first time, you know, that I had kind of reached out and approached the band with trying to work with some outside people on a few of them. You know, I mean, we did a lot of writing ourselves. I did a lot of writing by myself. But like Legends Rise and Bulletproof and Eye of the Storm, songs like that, there was some collaborations. And I'm really happy with the record. You know, I feel like it is exactly that. I think it's an expansion. You know, it has some new sounds. You know, I'm certainly not interested in sounding the same every single record. You know, I know there's some hardcore metal fans out there that are a little bit taken back and going like, what are you doing here? There's like a legit ballad on this record.
Yeah, that's a great track, by the way. Under Your Scars, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and so it's one of those things that you go, well, you just have to kind of come to terms that you're never going to please everybody. But our goal is, you know, to be able to expand the fan base. And so far, the reviews and the comments we've been getting from the fan base and some new people are really positive, and everyone seems to be really enjoying this record. So,
I mean, I'm being dead serious with you. I mean, on first listen, I really liked it, and that's really rare for me with a record. I thought the production was great. I love that it was all quick hitters, man. It just kept you engaged. And then, like I said, you've got that ballad on there, which I thought was really cool. Your vocal on there is killer. And then right down to the last track, I love the last track, Eye of the Storm, I thought was so cool. And that had a lot of that sort of Godsmack sort of attitude in it, just from top to bottom. I did not know, because I know you said you're sending me the physical. I don't have that yet, but I did not know that you worked with outside people. I think that's really, I mean, that's a great thing for you to be willing to do at this stage in your career. It's got to be a little scary, though, because I know how close this has been to you since day one and how protective you are. So to have that trust and to listen to some other outside people to expand a little bit, I mean, that's a bold move by you, who was, you know, very, you know, you've been very protective of this.
Yeah, but you know, see, I years ago, I was able to come to a place in my life, professionally and as a songwriter, to be able to separate my emotions from my music. And I think that's sometimes a mistake an artist can make when they're too close to it because they believe everything is great. And for me, you know, as I've developed my producing skills and I've learned that my strength is really within arrangements and composing, I've been able to step away from that and really look at the song as the song and think of it from a fan's point of view. And is this a good song or is it not a good song? And that's my two genres now. I don't like music to be looked at as a competition, and I certainly don't like to categorize music anymore. So I've chopped my genres into two. It's either a good song or it's a bad song. And if it's a good song, it makes the record. And if it's a bad song, it doesn't. And I don't care. You know, like if someone seen my playlist on my phone, they would be shocked at what I listen to on shuffle. I mean, you know, I really don't care, you know, if it's Lady Gaga or if it's Slayer. Like if it's a good song, it's a good song. And that's, I appreciate music. I appreciate all these artists and what we do. I know how tough it is out there. And we're all in the trenches together. And I am a big supporter of supporting the art and the musicians. And I think it, you know, it needs to be that way. And I think rock is starting to circle back. And I'm really, you know, excited to work with people and be friends with the Dave Grohl's and the Lizzy from Hailstorms and all these amazing bands that I think write incredible music. And I think we should all stay together to wave the flag together because it's important to preserve rock music.
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, and I'm encouraged about the future as well because you still have some great stuff from the really old guard. You've got the guys that are kind of in that middle rung right now, which shockingly is you. I mean, I can't believe it's 20 years since the first record, which is nuts. So you think about that, and then you have the newer guys. I mean, I love some of these newer bands that are coming up. I mean, I love Rival Sons. I love the Struts. I love some of these guys on the scene as well and making some noise. Regardless of what you think of them, Greta Van Fleet is blowing up. So awesome, it's great to see that for rock music. And then, you know, you're out there getting ready to go do a tour with Shinedown, releasing, you know, I think a really, really great record. So I think it's an encouraging time for rock. You hear people kind of poo-pooing where rock is at, but I kind of feel like it's on the cusp of maybe, you know, breaking through again, at least on the mainstream a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we're working through some scar tissue, and that's what it is. It's, you know, pop and hip hop and a lot of that stuff has kind of dominated the charts for a long time now. But, you know, as people know, and I hope they, you know, understand that how history works is everything's cyclical. And it's going to, you know, it's going to come back and it's going to be strong again. It's just a matter of when it really hits in full force. But it seems that every decade or two, you know, everything kind of loops back around again. And we're hoping to be on the forefront of that because, you know, we really spent a lot of time, a lot of thought on this record, what to do. It was scary. You know, there was certainly some moves that I decided to make that I was going, well, this could alienate some people here. But, you know, if we lose one and gain 50, then I'm okay with those numbers in the end. Because, you know, I really think that when I look back at 20 years, I'm like, well, you know, the original fans that were there when they were, you know, 18, 22, 24 years old are now in their 40s or 50s and have 15-year-old kids of their own that are learning about Godsmack and being introduced to our band in a whole new generation. And we want to be able to, you know, write great music that appeals to everybody.
Yeah, but I think, you know, listening to this, I mean, I would caution people who haven't heard the record yet because they may think that they're going to get the new record and it's, you know, you're going to be rapping on it and it's got loops. And sound. I mean, this is still a hard rock record. I mean, yeah, you've taken you brought in some different elements, but to my ears, man, it's still a kick-ass record. The production is great. And I love the different little turns that you took. I mean, it's been 20 years. You're going to mature. You're going to change. You're going to grow. The question that I have though is you mentioned it before, you've done some solo stuff now where it's very different than Godsmack, which anybody stepping out from their main band, it should be. But having done those records and gone in that direction, do you think that has influenced you as a writer coming back to Godsmack?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's what I was saying earlier is that, you know, I took some experiences that I've had and looking at the solo stuff and how unique it came out and how different it was. And, you know, I got a lot of good nods for that stuff because it just was written from the heart. It was written truthfully. It was very honest. But more importantly, it was a combination of so many different music genres and backgrounds that these musicians have had. And I thought it was important to kind of, you know, take that concept but not run with it too far. I mean, I'm very open to just hearing music. And, you know, I don't care if it's a country writer or a pop writer or a rock writer or a metal writer. I'm always interested in that because I feel like some of the greatest songs and greatest genres have been developed through experimentation. I mean, you know, Aerosmith went through it at one point. Even, you know, Metallica, you look back at them and, you know, when they came out with the Black record, how many people were just like, they thought Sad But True was the biggest sellout. And I'm like, man, that's one of the heaviest songs I've ever heard them write.
Oh, yeah. What about Nothing Else Matters? I mean, and then the whole Load Reload period. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so I felt like, why not, man? You know, it's time. You're right. This band is, you know, we're maturing. The music is maturing. And we're hoping our fans come along for the journey and to be able to recruit some new ones along the way. But I didn't want to have fear get in my way of writing what I felt was the kind of music I feel is where I want to be right now. And, you know, even when this day comes where I decide I don't want to tour anymore or maybe, you know, hang up that hat, you know, producing and writing is where I'm going to be. And so for me, it's just, you know, always about developing and learning more. You know, I'm a student of the art and I look to a lot of the peers and, you know, a lot of the new and the old to continue to help develop my skills and as a songwriter.
Does it feel like for you that it's been 20 years since the first record?
That's a tricky question. You know, I know the common answer would be like, no, it feels like a blink of an eye, but
it feels like it.
but my knees don't agree with that.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think a rock band could come out and do what Godsmack did today on a first record like that?
You know, another great question, Eddie, man. It's tough. You know, I think that it's getting better again. I think we're starting to figure things out that we've been very stuck with for a while. You know, as you know, you're a big fan of vinyl and you're a big fan of, like, you know, the analog world and all that as well as I am. And back in the day, you know, it was all about making great records, selling physical product. And then the digital world took over and that kind of tipped things upside down. And we've seen some of the great, you know, empires like Tower Records go down and all that stuff. And now we're kind of getting back to, you know, sales again and that kind of thing. But now the streaming thing kicks in, right? And so here we go again. And so it's really, I think it works both ways. I think that there's definitely bigger opportunities for bands nowadays to be able to reach millions of people in the click of a button, which I think is brilliant. But there's also something about that that is creating this corporate polished kind of music sometimes for me that I'm not a big fan of. And I love, you know, the artists back in the day from the Fleetwood Macs to the Elton Johns to whoever it was that would go in there and cut vinyl, you know, to go in there and work. When you sang, when you hear those records, there was no Pro Tools, there was no auto-tuning.
It's great to talk to Sully, but the real guy that I would love to talk to and get an interview with is Salvatore Pasquale, who is the real star right now. For those that don't know who that would be the director of the epic video for Bulletproof. Tell me about doing that, man. Whose idea was that? I thought it was hysterical. I thought it was so cool to see somebody go and do it. You know, so everybody runs a video on YouTube these days and lyric videos and all that, but you went the extra mile for sure.
Yeah, you know, they say comedy isn't anything more than reality exaggerated, right? So that wasn't too far off from what was really going on with us and just, you know, getting to a place where we were getting some video treatments from directors or whatever. And some things are just ridiculous. And you're like, wow, we're going to direct our own video like that. We know this band better than anyone. I'll do it myself. I definitely know the people that have the equipment and that are great DPs and all that. And you know, that was kind of what we were on track to do. You know, and then obviously Pasquale showed up and just destroyed everything and you know the rest.
You're Italian. Is Erna an Italian name?
Yeah, Sicilian.
Your whole family?
My mom's side's from Naples, my dad's side's from Sicily.
So you grew up in a dominantly Italian household and all the, because I'm half Italian and I, You had it down, man. I mean, every gesture, every way you expressed yourself. I mean, that's not the character you portray in the video is not too far off from people I grew up with in my family.
Well, I still spend a lot of time in Sicily. You know, I have property there, and my dad grew up there, and so I hang out with those people all the time. And so, you know, it was really it's something that's just kind of second nature for me to get into. And when we started thinking about, you know, this character and how we were going to implement him into the video and take over and just kind of, you know, outshine everybody. I just knew that, you know, I had to like really go for it or it just wasn't going to work. So.
How did your
a little embarrassing, but you know, they could have did without the butt pads, but then again, that was my idea. So in the end, it's all good.
How did your Sicilian family take to the caricature? Have they watched it? Are they okay with it?
Oh my God, they were laughing so hard. The funny thing is I still have a lot of, you know, friends in Sicily, and some of them don't even speak English, and so they're watching the video and they can't understand it until, you know, some of the Italian words are dropped. But once the video kicks in, obviously it's pretty self-explanatory. But yeah, everyone seemed to really enjoy it so far. And it was fun, you know. I mean, again, we're at a place in our lives that I'm not that same young, angry guy I was 20 years ago when I wrote the first record, you know. I'm in a different place now, and I'm just really enjoying the ride, and it's fun, and why not have fun? You know, I think laughter is such a beautiful thing, and if we can entertain people for 10 minutes, then, you know, then we've done our job.
Yeah, the video is 10 minutes long for a song that's 3 minutes long. So you know there's some extra shenanigans going on. If you haven't watched it, of course, just go to the band's website and you can see it there. Or, of course, YouTube, wherever you check stuff out, godsmack.com as well. But you also have a few cameos in it. You've got my old buddy Sebastian Bach. How did that one come about?
Well, I've known Sebastian for a while. I met him through Paul Geary, actually, who's our manager, and some people may remember him from a band called Extreme.
Of course.
And so, you know, they did a lot of touring together back in the day. And actually, Paul, when he went into management, he started managing Billy Ray Cyrus for a while, who's also, you know, making an appearance in the video and did such a great job. Those two together, I thought, were a great pair.
Right.
And so we were really blessed to have those two in there. I felt like put it over the top.
Yeah, one of them suggests to grow a mullet, right? Is that was one of the storylines? Grow your hair really long in the back and cut the front.
Was it business in the front, party in the back?
Yeah, and actually, doesn't Geary do a quick walkthrough in the video? Isn't that him that walks through the hallway and just kind of looks?
He opens up the whole video. He's the one, you know, letting us know that, you know, he has some video directors that he wants to introduce us to. So that's our real manager in the video.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. Everybody check it out. The video for Bulletproof is out there right now. So touring wise, you're already hitting it, right? You already got stuff going on?
We are on a small promo tour right now, doing some of the festivals and, you know, letting people know the record is out, and then we're going to be ramping up this summer to go out on the road with Shinedown. And we're hoping to take that into a world tour. I know that, you know, we have a lot of plans and we're going to be gone for quite a while, so, you know, we're getting a lot of emails and posts that people are saying, like, why isn't this city on tour? Why isn't this country on tour? And my answer to them is just be patient, because we're doing this one tour at a time, but we plan on hitting every country, every state. And this thing is going to probably go till at least the fall of 2019. So if you don't see the dates yet, I promise you there'll be more tours posted.
Well, you've got some of the U.S. festivals, the rock festivals coming up. You've got Carolina Rebellion May 5th. You've got Rock on the Range May 20th. You've got the one I host, Rocklahoma, on May 26th. I saw you headline. You're headlining Saturday at Rocklahoma this year, and I saw you guys when you played it last time, man, and you literally blew that stage up. You were one of the few bands, because I don't usually get to get out front and watch from the front all that often because I'm running around a little bit, but when you guys played Rocklahoma last time, I got out there in a golf cart and watched from, like, full on ways back from the stage, and it looked amazing. So you're still bringing a big show to these festivals?
Oh yeah, you know, we're you know, not only did we decide to kind of, you know, explore with some new sounds or whatever, but, you know, we're really kind of rebirthing this whole band, which is what the theme is that runs through this whole record. So new production, new live show, new everything. And so we're really, you know, for the festivals, we came up with a pretty decent look that we're happy with. But for the Shinedown tour and on, we're definitely building some pretty massive production that, you know, I think people are going to like. But yeah, we're always, you know, we're always interested in blowing things up on stage. So there'll be lots of pyro. And of course, the double drum solo and that kind of thing is always one of the spectacles in our show.
Well, the tour kicks off on July 13th, the dates with, well, actually July 22nd, the dates with Shinedown, and right, runs into the early part of September. All the dates are up on Godsmack.com. So wherever you're listening, go check it out and see if there's one near you. I'm not familiar with the opening act on that tour, though, Like a Storm. What's their story?
They're a young band, man, but they're doing really, really well. You know, I think you should check them out. They're really good. I like them a lot. They're up and coming, and we're trying to mix it up a little bit and take some of you know, the younger bands out to play first of three. You know, we'll probably switch it up during a tour. You know, take one out for a few weeks and switch to another one. But there's some great new bands out there that are really starting to make some noise that I like a lot, and they're one of them. You know, Stitched Up Heart is another band that I'm really digging right now. They just have a great sound, great look, and you know, I think they're doing really well. They have a new record coming out soon, so I think they're out right now with Stitched Up Heart is fronted by Mixie, and I think she's out with some of the other girls in these metal bands like New Year's Day and Hailstorm and In This Moment. So they're doing kind of like a Bad Bitch Run tour. So that's kind of cool, you know. But yeah,
and then you got Red Sun Rising on the second half.
Red
I noticed.
Sun Rising. Yep, exactly.
And then you go to and then you've got Europe, which you've announced in the fall, and a bunch of stuff in Europe. Has Godsmack toured a lot outside of the U.S.? Do you guys do well in other parts of the world?
Well, in the past, it's been kind of hit and miss, and I'm not going to bore you with the details, but someone at the label a long time ago dropped the ball, and we were just starting to pick up momentum in the early days, and then, you know, we were picking up some of the biggest tours. I mean, Sabbath, Metallica, Limp Bizkit at the time. And there was just no product in the stores. There was no press. There was almost like they forgot about us once we get outside of the U.S. And so it suffered for a little bit, but we've been spending the last 5 years rebuilding. And now it's been a priority for us to really, you know, make sure that we have all these international markets on board as well. So we're going to be hitting everything from, you know, Europe to Australia, South America, Japan. I mean, this thing's going around the globe at least twice.
Do you still like being on the road that much?
I do, man. You know, there was a time where I was questioning it, you know, and I was getting tired. And but I don't know, you know, something kicked in the last year or so. And this band is in a great place, you know, personally, mentally, health-wise. We're just ready to work. And I think sometimes when you get away from it for a little while, you realize, you know, how important the brand is and what you've built. And I think it's important for us to kind of ride this legacy out and see where it goes, because it's really, you know, it's a really important band to us, and it's provided a great life for us. But more importantly, we've gotten over those humps that destroy bands over and over again with the drugs and the alcohol and the fighting and the ego and the bullshit. It's like, finally, we've gotten to a place where, you know, where we understand each other, and it's fun again. It's fun like it was when we were jamming in a garage and just having girls over and drinking beers. Like, it's back to that. And that's, so we're thinking, if this is where it stays, you know, we could be out for another 10 years. We don't know, but right now we're just enjoying the ride.
And it's as a rock fan, it's really important that you guys feel that way, make good new music, great new music like you've just made, and go out there and play these big shows. Because if you think about it, okay, Godsmack is 20 years in since the first record. All the time I hear from rock fans saying to me, well, what's the, you know, this band just retired, this band just broke up, this band just ended, these guys are, you know, doing their farewell tour. Who's the next wave? What's going to keep this thing going? And yeah, there's a lot of younger bands than you that are emerging that we're all rooting for. But at the same token, those bands in that middle time slot of you guys, like 20 years in, you're still very much in your prime, but you still also have that legacy to play off of to draw the big crowds. So I think it's important, because you guys, whether you like it or not, are the natural successors to the bands that from the 70s that are starting to wind down.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, you know, and I feel the same way. I think there's a void here that's about to hit, you know, because we have a lot of these bands that we've grown up with and respected that are our arena bands, you know, and our stadium bands, and there's the Stones and Metallica and Aerosmith. And some of these bands are kind of heading out now, you know, and they're announcing their retirement tours and things like that. And I started thinking, man, who's going to be these bands? Who's going to be these arena bands? Like, we can't lose that. You know, we can't lose that element of the big live shows, because it was important to me as a kid, and I'm sure it's important to other people. And I want people to experience concerts like I grew up watching them, and how big and massive they were and fun. And it's a real experience, you know, it really is. When those lights go, I don't care how good your technology is nowadays, I so encourage people to stop, you know, watching concerts on YouTube and on their iPhones. Like, you know, not that you can't later, but don't deprive yourself of going to that show, because there's an electricity that hits when those lights go out and that intro starts that you cannot replicate through a computer screen. And I want to be able to help preserve that if we can. And so thankfully we still have great bands like the Foo Fighters and stuff like that, that are, again, waving the flag, you know, and we want to be able to do our part, and we want all the bands to be able to unite and support each other, because again, you know, this isn't a competition. This is, we're all in this together, and, music is a universal language that we all connect through in our own way, but universally as well. So.
Last thing, where are you at? You mentioned about taking in concerts the right way, and I agree with you. Where are you at as far as the whole cell phone at concert deal, when you as a singer up there looking out at these crowds, and half of the people you're looking at is the back of their phones? Do you care? I mean, I've been to some shows lately, and I had the CEO from this company called Yonder, who's made the technology that people have to give their phones up before they go into a venue. I mean, where are you at on all that? How do you see it?
Well, I'd love to see that happen, just because for the fans, not for me, but I really want the fans to be able to experience the show as they should, and not through this little, you know, foreign screen in their hands. I mean, I get it. You know, I know that sometimes it's your only opportunity to go to a show. It's your first and only time you're going to see this act. But there's also something really magical that happens when you don't have that, and you can just absorb it and sit in the moment and be able to, like, you know, immerse yourself into the performance and in the show. And I just experienced that myself recently. Just last year, I found myself going to shows that were available to me because they were in my area, or they were where I was on a break that day. And they just happened to be these iconic bands like Toto and Tom Petty and Joe Walsh. And I even got to go see Elton John at Caesar's Palace on New Year's Eve, which I didn't even think to pull out my phone. I was just so, you know, hypnotized by the performance and the songs that meant so much to me. And I think there's just something really amazing that happens when you allow that to happen. So, you know, I understand, but, why people want to, you know, capture it and be able to relive it a little bit. But I think everyone will agree with me with this. Even when you get it home and you watch it 2 days later, it doesn't feel the same. So sometimes it's better just retain it in your memory and in your body, because I think that's the stuff that you'll take, you know, to the grave one day and remember all these great times you had in your life, and not through a you know, 4-inch computer screen.
Yeah, the first time I saw it done, I went to see Stone Temple Pilots when they debuted their new singer a couple months ago in L.A., and they were doing it as people walked in, and their management said, you know, you don't have to do it with your phone. We know you, we trust you, but just don't shoot anything. And I was just like, you know, hearing from people grumbling about it. And then they said to me, they were like, but wait until you go inside. You're going to see the vibe in the room is totally different, because instead of people texting and everything and just looking at their screens before the band goes on, people are talking to each other. They're interacting. They're getting excited for the show. It was a completely different vibe. And the guy who developed these pouches, this company Yonder, who I had on, he had an interesting perspective. He told me the reason why he came up with the idea was that he's actually a fan of jazz music, but he told me that he found that people in the audience, when people pull out their phone, people around that person with the phone tend to act differently, because they don't cut loose as much, because they feel like their privacy is being captured a little bit on the phone. It was a totally different perspective than I thought what he was going to do. He said it changed the dynamic in the crowd, because people are like, oh, everything's being filmed, I'm going to be a little bit more reserved. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective, too.
Amazing. I love it. I love it, man. It's a smart guy, and I think it's totally on point. You know, and like I said, I think sometimes you just need to allow yourself to enjoy the moment and know that you're going to have that memory. You're always going to have that memory. It doesn't go away. The brain is way more complex and way more powerful than any the fastest computer in the world. And I think they've proven that because, you know, you can have a computer that can spin numbers at, you know, a million beats a second, but the brain can compute so much faster than that, retain so much more, and you have the elements of emotion and feeling and sense and taste and smell and all that as well. So there's just so much more, and you know, your brain is your best computer you could ever ask for. So you have to trust in it. And
I know,
we build these shows for those reasons. You know what I mean? We want you to see these moments. We want you in a blink of an eye to be able to catch these great effects and things that we use on stage that we spend months and months and months designing. And it's for the human body to absorb. It's not for a computer.
Yeah, I know I keep saying I'm going to let you go, and I promise I will after this. But
yeah, no
you worries. talk about the early your mind and remembering stuff. My first concert ever, December 16th, 1977, Kiss at Madison Square Garden. I can still smell the air. I can still, if I close my eyes, see where I was sitting and still remember to some degree the experience. Now, I can't remember, you know, every song and every moment, but it's still pretty ingrained in my mind, and it's a long time ago. How well do you remember your first concert, and what was it?
Oh, I could never forget it. It was the Joe Perry Project at Lowell Auditorium. And it was the first time I drank Löwenbräu beer. And I threw up for about 15 minutes before Joe Perry went on with the head spins. And when
I'm sure Joe Perry did too. At that point, he was probably puking backstage for other reasons.
yeah, exactly. But I never remembered a band being so loud in my life. I was up against the barricade, and I was spinning to begin with, and they came out, and I'll never forget that experience. But they were amazing, and I remember most of the details from that one. But I remember all the concerts I went to. I just remember there's a certain feeling you get when you walk in that room. Back in the day when I would go see Rush in an arena or Aerosmith or whoever it was, there's a certain thing that you just retain when you're not distracted by your phone. You know, you can just really take in everything, the smell of the place and the visuals and, you know, the people around you and how they're interacting. And, you know, sometimes you can even get a rush from seeing other people enjoying the show and seeing how they respond to it, because music moves people in ways that I've never seen anything else do. You know, and I think there's documentaries on that kind of stuff. And I'm still amazed by that. And I've been a musician since I was 3 years old. But I love how music can move people. I love how it can get inside of you and do things to you that nothing else on this in this world can do. And there's a reason why that they, you know, even for medical reasons and health reasons, they go and visit these people that have been, you know, in homes now that are catatonic and things like that and haven't moved in years. And you put a set of headphones on them and play some of their music from back in the day, and all of a sudden you see their body stop moving. And I mean, it's just an anomaly to the doctors, you know, and so it's really a powerful thing. It's a gift, and I think it's a shame if you don't allow yourself that experience after paying for a ticket and going to see a band that, you know, or an artist or whoever it is that you have been inspired by, and it's why the reason you're there in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I also would have loved to have seen that project show, because I love the first two Joe Perry Project records. Are just killer records. And that's a weird time, because if you went to see Aerosmith, you probably saw him with Crespo then. And I love Rock and a Hard Place too. So it was a weird time for Aerosmith because the wheels were coming off. But out of it, I mean, Night in the Ruts and Rock and a Hard Place, I love. And I love the first two Project records. So out of all that sort of that time, which is not viewed as the most commercially successful period for Aerosmith, in retrospect, I think there was some great music that came out of it, and you got to
see
some of it. Yeah,
totally. I mean, when I first seen Aerosmith, it was literally down to Steven Tyler and Tom Hamilton, because Jimmy Crespo and Rick Dufay were in the band, because Brad Whitford had left as well as Joe Perry. And Joey Kramer was sick with the flu, so they had Bobby Rondinelli from Rainbow filling in. And it was at the Worcester Centrum, and it was the show that you probably read about in his books where they couldn't
Joe was backstage?
Tyler. Yeah, they couldn't find him. Intro's rolling. They find him on the roof. He's booting up. All that crap was going on. Gets on stage. Curtains open. Toys in the attic. He came out, he grabbed his mic stand, he leaned over, like in that famous Tyler pose, and he said, "In the attic, lights," boom, and fell on his face. And the band finished the song instrumentally, and the curtains closed, and the show was over. And I was like, that was my first experience with Aerosmith. And I went, oh, my God. And I was a huge fan. I still am, by the way.
Me but, too, yeah.
Of course, I've seen them 8 times after that. But that was my first Aerosmith experience. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's no one on the stage. It's Tyler and Tom Hamilton, and Tyler just got carried off.
Jimmy Crespo told me something like that happened the very first show he played with Aerosmith, and he thought it was like a move that Tyler did to, like, you know, like trying to resuscitate him. And he said he didn't know what to do, and he would literally walked over and kicked, like nudged with his foot, because he had to keep playing guitar, nudged Steven in the side of the ribs to see if he would wake up, because he didn't know if it was an act. He didn't know what the hell was going on. And what's really crazy is Joe Perry used to go to those shows. Like, When Aerosmith played around Boston, Joe would go see Aerosmith with Crespo in the band.
Wow.
I mean, that's amazing. I mean, dude, we could talk forever. I appreciate the time. I'll let you go. I'll see you in a few weeks at Rocklahoma. Everybody check out the new Godsmack record. Again, it's out there now. It is a killer album. It's called When Legends Rise. Check out the video for Bulletproof, the 10-minute epic directed by Salvatore Pasquale, a.k.a. Sully Erna, which is so much fun.
Comedic gold.
It is great stuff. Well, listen, safe travels, and like I said, I'll see you at Rocklahoma in a few weeks, man.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Talk to you soon. Always fun to talk to Sully. Thanks to him. Check out Godsmack on tour, and check out their new album, When Legends Rise, out there right now. And my thanks to Joe Elliott and all the Def Leppard guys for inviting me to rehearsal, and Joe making some time. Phil Collin also gave me some time as well on the back end, but we had more time with Joe, so that's why I brought you that interview. Remember, all of the interviews originated on my show on SiriusXM 106 Volume. Hope you enjoy that show. Hope you check it out. Hope you become a subscriber if you aren't already, and join me on Volume every day live at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, replaying every night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, on Channel 106. Become an all-access member of EddieTrunk.com. If you do, you get my syndicated FM show on demand anytime you want. Check for affiliate radio stations in your market to see if it airs there. Check out the merch store on my website. All sorts of great merch is available, including a brand new Trunk Nation shirt, all of my appearances, which I ran down earlier, right on the homepage. For more information, check it all out online. And on social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. One more reminder, brand new TV show, Trunk Fest. It premieres July 1st on Access TV at 9:30, 8:30 Central. Lots going on. Keep up with me on Twitter. That's where I'm most complete and up to the second. Appreciate you doing so. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks to Katie Irizarry for putting it all together. See you next Thursday for another all-new episode, free, podcast1.com and iTunes.
the Lady Gang podcast is hitting you up every Tuesday and Thursday on Podcast One. Check out this week's chat with Dancing with the Stars alum, Brooke Burke.
I traveled around the world and did 40 countries in 2 years. And did insane things.
That's
like,
awesome.
I flew a rocket, I swam with sharks, I jumped out of planes. I did things that we would never do. Yeah. As a woman, if I thought about it, I'd be like, I would never do that.
No.
Total adrenaline junkie. Amazing.
Download the Lady Gang podcast at Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Also remember to rate and review.